All right, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to Windows Azure Websites Under the Hood. My name's Craig Kitterman. I'm a product manager in the Windows Azure product marketing team, and I'm joined with my colleague, Nir, who will introduce himself in a few minutes when he comes on. And we're here to talk to you a little bit more in depth about Windows Azure Websites. Before we get started, I'm just curious to know how many of you went to Nir and Karandeep's session yesterday on Windows Azure Websites? Okay, wow, quite a few.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, that's good. We did the same session in the U.S. It was like barely anybody. So what that means is the first part, we're going to do a quick sort of overview of Windows Azure Websites again for the folks that didn't have the opportunity to attend that session yesterday. We'll do a couple of quick, simple demos, and then we'll really dig into the deeper content where Nir's going to walk through how his team built the system and the overall architecture of how it works, and then we'll talk about some of the underlying components. So basically, we're going to do the general overview, like I mentioned. Really, this is just about a level set to make sure nobody's left behind when we go into the deeper stuff. We'll talk about the architecture, configurations, and then it wouldn't be a cloud talk if we didn't talk about scale. So that's a super important bit that really is the crux of what makes Windows Azure Websites so special. And we'll throw some demos in there, hopefully, so you don't fall asleep in the middle of the process. So what is Windows Azure Websites? Well, the simplest way to think about it is websites in seconds. It allows you to get up and running very quickly and easily by starting simple. So taking the applications that you already have and getting those things up and running in the cloud in a very simple and straightforward way using the tools and processes that you already are using today. Just a quick show of hands. I found this fascinating in the last ticket. How many of you have classic ASP applications running, you know, old school .ASP? Okay, maybe 25% of the room. That's pretty cool. So as Nir and Karandeep showed yesterday, you can even run classic ASP apps. So if you have a bunch of legacy hardware sitting around with old stacks on it, you can pump those applications into Windows Azure Websites and run them alongside your more modern sort of .NET applications and manage them and monitor them and interact with them in the same way. So it's kind of an interesting thing. So it's all about taking what you have, the tools and processes you have. You don't have to learn anything new to use Windows Azure Websites. It's just there. It supports out of the box ASP.NET, PHP, and Node.js. And we support any developer workstation you'd like. Unfortunately, not everyone in the world's running Windows Workstation for the development environment. We recognize that. And that was a really important part of this product and of this release from Windows Azure that we announced just a couple weeks ago, is to really make this a first-class experience using the platform from any OS. We have great command line tools for Mac and Linux, and we have a great new portal that's based on HTML5 that will render on any device. In fact, it works really great on an iPad even. So it's really a cross-platform experience now interacting with the platform. Once you're ready to go live, deploying your application to Windows Azure Websites is very easy and very quick, and it's instant. So you can use Git, you can use FTP, you can use the Web Deploy protocol that is part of Visual Studio and Web Matrix and some of the other Microsoft tools, and instantly push your application live. When it's time to scale that application based on usage, et cetera, you simply drag a slider bar, and Nir will show you how this works later, and click Save, and within seconds, you have multiple instances of your website up and running in the cloud, servicing all that traffic. So it's all about being fast and agile and being simple. So with that, I'm just going to walk through a quick demo, getting up and running with a couple of simple applications on Windows Azure Websites. So let's see here. All right, I'm live. So what you'll see here, this is the new Windows Azure portal. Again, it's all based on HTML5, and this was rolled out just a couple of weeks ago. I should mention that Windows Azure Websites and all the features and capabilities that we're going to talk about today are in preview mode. So as of June 6th, they're in preview mode. They'll go into general availability sometime later this year. We don't know exactly when that'll be, but a few months out, and basically it's all about getting feedback from you as you use the system, understanding what you want to see, finding, obviously, bugs here and there, and making sure that all of those things are rock solid before we roll into general availability. And once we're in general availability, then you'll get the full sort of SLA that's associated with Windows Azure and be able to actually start loading real production applications on there. What we'll do to start out is we're going to create a new website. And I've actually already got a very simple application running here in Web Matrix. So if you haven't seen this, this is the Web Matrix tool. It's kind of a lightweight web development environment that's really optimized for building applications for the cloud. So I'm going to run this application. And it's a very simple application that reports traffic. So the scenario here is you're going skiing with your family, and as you're going up to the ski resort, you need to report, are things running smooth or are you stuck? And then everyone else who's going to go to the ski resort can see, oh, things are running smooth or they're not running smooth. So it's just a very simple application. It has two buttons on it. And we can this is optimized for sort of a mobile scenario. So what I'll do here is actually load this into an iPhone emulator so you can see what it looks like. And then I'm just going to go and sort of add a few clicks here. And then I can look at the report of the clicks that I added, and it sort of gives me a little graphical representation. It's running smooth or it's not. Okay, so let's go ahead and just publish that application. Right now it was running, in this case, on my local machine. You can see here it's running on localhost port 13728. And I'm going to go ahead and publish that live to the cloud. So in order to do that, I need to first go into Windows Azure Websites and create a new website. So I just click New Website, quick Create, and I'm just going to give it a name. And as long as that's not taken, that green light will come up there. And we're going to go ahead and quick create this. And what Windows Azure Websites is doing is actually provisioning all the resources associated with the application. And now that the status has changed to running, I can actually go ahead and deploy that application. So the easiest way to do this from the WebMatrix tool is to use the WebDeploy protocol. And the easiest way to use WebDeploy is for me to simply click on my application, get into this dashboard view, and download the published profile. So I save that to my local machine. Now I go back into WebMatrix here and click on Settings. And I'm going to import my published settings. And you'll see that automatically just populates all the fields required for me to authenticate and actually publish an application into that newly created website. And I can validate that connection, just make sure everything's cool. And then click Save. Now I can go ahead and just push the Publish button. And this is going to push the entire application. And this just takes a few moments. You'll see down here the publish process in the bottom. Now, what I didn't mention is that the database that this application is using is actually out on Windows Azure. So I went and created before this session a SQL Azure, excuse me, now it's called Windows Azure SQL Database, a new Windows Azure SQL database. Something doesn't sound quite right there. And just set the connection string for my local app to that cloud database. So when I publish the web files, it's still pointing at that same Windows Azure SQL database. And so now that the app is published, I can click on it, and you'll see the URL is the one that was associated with the DNS name when I created the app, and there it is running in the cloud. So now I have my traffic reporting app up and running. But what I really want to do is I want to expose this information through my blog so that other people who are coming to the ski resort and like to read about skiing can read my ski blog and also check out what the current situation is at the resort. So what I'm going to do is create a new WordPress site. In order to do that, I simply click New again, Website, and this time from Gallery. Now, Windows Azure has a new open source application gallery that allows you to get up and running very quickly and easily with a number of popular open source applications. And you'll notice here there's some .NET applications, but we also have PHP applications and others. And the reason that we're able to do that is because we also now have MySQL database support. So you can create applications using the gallery that use either SQL Server or Windows Azure SQL Database or MySQL. We've partnered with a company called ClearDB to actually offer that MySQL database as a service, and it's exposed seamlessly through this process. So I will go ahead and install WordPress by simply scrolling down here, clicking WordPress. I'll give it a name, My Ski Blog Tech Ed. And I want to create a new MySQL database. And the last step, I just need to agree to ClearDB's Terms of Service. Again, that's that database provider that we are partnering with for the MySQL database. And click Next. So now Windows Azure is actually going out and doing sort of some of the same underlying provisioning of the actual website, But this time, it's actually also going and getting out the latest build of WordPress that's been optimized for Windows Azure websites, installing that, configuring the MySQL database, and setting up the connection strings and everything like that. So as soon as this status changed to running, I can finish the WordPress installation process. And it usually takes, 15 seconds or so. Okay, so there we go. So my WordPress site is ready. So now when I click Browse, those of you who have installed WordPress, this screen will look very familiar to you. Apparently it haunts Nir in his dreams.
Yeah, too many times. Too many demos. Should do something else.
Let's just go ahead and do the quick and easy WordPress install here. And as you know, if you've done this before, what's happening now is WordPress is actually now creating the tables in the MySQL database and getting everything set up. Now I can log into my WordPress site. And let's just customize our blog just a little bit here. So the first thing I'm going to do is change the appearance. Oops. Let's see if that something was funky there for a minute. And let's change the header image to something a little more ski-like. And I've got some things here. So let's go ahead and do skiresort.jpg and upload that bad boy. And, let's just publish it as is, I guess, because I screwed up the cropping. And the next thing we're going to do is create a post.
A page, rather.
Thanks, Nir. And this page is going to be the actual traffic report. So all I'm going to do is simply embed some HTML here in an iframe that will show the report from that other app that we published in the other website. So I'm going to click back over here and get the DNS name for this other website, which was trafficreportapp.azurewebsites.net. And that's what I'm going to paste into my my source code here. And go ahead and publish that. So now when I go back to my ski blog, we have kind of an overly sized header image. But I've got my traffic report here. And when I click on that and scroll back down, you can see there's that embedded traffic report. So in just a matter of minutes, we provisioned a database, which I actually did before I came in, set up an application in WebMatrix, published that to Windows Azure websites, created a WordPress blog, and embedded that that other application inside the WordPress blog all in, 8 minutes or something like that.
And also free.
And this is all free. That's a great point. So we're actually running right now on shared instances, and we'll get into a little bit more later in the talk about the different instance types and the different scalability options you have with Windows Azure websites. But as part of the preview offer, we have right now the ability to create 10 websites for free. So all of this is done for free and can basically run in perpetuity just as is. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Nir, and Nir's going to walk us through like what actually makes this work and how Windows Azure websites ticks under the covers.
Is this the one?
So we'll click back to the...
I have a quick question.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
You showed the example site with an Azure URL.
No one ever asks this question.
No, he's joking.
Yeah, I'd love it to know. Yeah, so basically we support CNAME or we'll support later on A record pointing into Azure websites, but that's only in the paid version. So the paid version is what we call the reserved instance, where you upgrade your shared instances into a dedicated server, and I'll talk about the architecture in a moment. We've made the decision to support CNAME in that mode. We're looking into other options as we exit preview and go into GA of having a cheaper shared version allow for CNAMEs. So that's kind of the number one dissat with our product at this point is that you can't make a nice URL for your shared instances. So I didn't know vanity was so big in the internet. So, no, just kidding. All right, so unfortunately that's not my daughter, she's much cuter. So I'm going
Hey, wait, that's my son.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, no. Oops, baby Kittleman.
Stock imagery, I think.
Yeah. But in this section, we'll go through some of the design options. What is behind the architecture that we're seeing, and a little bit on how the data flow and the control flow of routing works. So I assume we have a lot of folks that are running kind of classic IIS and a large number of sites. So some of the challenges that all of us have been encountering, I've been running, who in the room remember what the Windows DNA is? You're as old as I am. Yeah, there you go. Distributed Internet Architecture, the N. So that's kind of the late 90s, early 2000. You build your sites in ASP.NET, your middle tier is in COM components, and your data is in a database. It was great, come on. Perfect. So XML, XSL, you know, all that good stuff. So some of the problems remain the same, right? You want to run a bunch of websites on one box. You have some scalability issues because IIS has to store the metadata in one big file. If you want to go with many websites running, many web servers running those websites, you start having issues with shared storage because you have latencies. With Windows Azure website, we try to solve all these problems. So when we talk about cloud first by design, we really talk about virtualizing the actual web servers that run the websites, and about scalability and statelessness. So I'm sure some of you have seen the other presentations about Azure. Windows Azure website is just a big, it's called the cloud service now, a big hosted service, which means all the machines are stateless. They can go up and down based on the needs of the Azure fabric, and that's part of the cool design of Windows Azure websites is that we're not seeing downtime when these things happen. The other big change that hopefully makes it into the next on-prem versions of IIS is the SQL configuration, is the main configuration repository. So today when you run IIS, you have the apphost.config. That's a monstrous, potentially monstrous XML file that includes all the metadata about your website. The issue with that is sometimes when you make changes, those changes ripple. So if you change one site, all your other sites you will get reloaded and you see some latencies and performance issues. And it's also not that portable. What we've done with Windows Azure website is we moved all the metadata about websites into a central repository. Right now implemented in SQL database, also implemented in, what did you call it, Windows Azure SQL database? And later on it might be in other repositories, which allows us to essentially scale to infinite, theoretically, amount of web servers and store the configuration of the website there. So later on, I'll show some demos that show how having central metadata is really helpful in running your farm, in managing your websites. So dynamic provisioning on demand, one of the scenarios that we have is trying to support really dense hosting, right? So let's say you're a hoster and you want to use Windows Azure website as your backend. You may have a lot of these WordPress sites that essentially never get used, right? You don't really want to waste resources on hosting these sites and storing them in memory where no one is using them. With Windows Azure websites, we're actually separating the act of publishing from the act of launching a website. So when you publish your website, we put it in the central storage, we register it with this central database, and we launch it on demand. If people use it a lot, then it will stay in memory, it will stay provisioned. But after a site has been gone for a while and no one has looked at it, we actually remove it from the web servers. That allows us to, again, scale up and have the other folks have the best performance possible when they go browse those websites. Network storage, again, all the content is stored in a central location. In the case of the Azure implementation of Windows Azure websites, we're sitting on top of XDrive. That, again, allows us to virtualize the nodes because the node that runs the website or the IIS is irrelevant. The content is in the central storage. It also allows you to manage state against that if you have multiple instances, which I'll describe a little bit of that later on. Stateless web servers, I think I've kind of talked a lot about that, but some of the models that we've seen of kind of multi-tenancy is essentially by having what I call, which is probably not correct from computer science perspective, but I call it a peer-to-peer network, where you have this content kind of synchronizing between a bunch of nodes. So one of the issues with that is obviously losing some content and having different versions of your site running on different boxes. So what we have decided to do is we chose to have a central location. So that gives us a very powerful way of making sure that you always see the latest content, and later on in future versions, it allows us to do stuff like A-B testing very naturally. Intelligent load balancing. I'll talk about it in a moment where we show kind of the data flow. But what we also have is we have a specific implementation of the application request routing, the IIS UBI for those who know about it, that actually talks to the central database and makes a smarter determination about which virtual node to route your traffic to. So we have the concept of hosting plans. For example, we have this thing we've just discussed. We have this free shared website option versus the dedicated option. What the router knows is he knows which customer owns this website that is just called, and the router goes to the database and tries to negotiate the best solution or the best node to put your site on. So in case that you're on the free shared plan, but no one ever looked at your site, we'll go around and find the IIS node or the virtual node that has the least amount of used memory, the point, and least amount of CPU, and we'll provision your site there. Or if you're in the reserved option, we'll go into the pool of reserved boxes that we keep hot in the background and provision you there. I think I'm showing this in a moment. So how does this thing work? We'll go through the request for a cold site. So what we mean when you say cold site is we just did this provisioning of a new website, but no one has ever browsed to it before. So we're going to hit the Azure Load Balancer. Azure Load Balancer knows that this host header belongs to Windows Azure websites. It's going to hit our application request router. We're going to go talk to the hosting database. So I talked a lot about the metadata repository. This is what we call the hosting database. It's going to go and say, okay, which type of site are you? Okay, I'm from shared, paid shared. I've never been provisioned before. Let me go find you a web server. It returns the name of the web worker to the ARR, and the traffic goes to that web worker. At that point, the web worker will go back to the database and say, hey, someone wanted me to launch foo.com. Is that okay for me to do that? That's an extra security check. And at that point, the database will give it all this metadata that is needed in order to create a private uphost.config and web.config. It links the actual connection, the actual source to the central repository. That's the storage controller. If there's a site content database, like we've seen here with the ski resort, there was some kind of a database, which is a very common pattern for websites. It will link to that. And at this point, the traffic will go back to the router. So again, very, very dynamic. Everything has happened on demand and data or kind of CPU is not wasted. Let's say that we're in a situation where in a shared website, but we have more than one instance. In this case, we're going into a different situation where the site has been active. It's a hot site. Oops. So again, we hit the load balancer. The load balancer now has a cached list of web workers and websites, so we don't have to go back to the database. And then we just hit the storage controller to find our content, and we can return the traffic there. Now, if I had the situation where I had more than one instance, and I think we have a section about those, basically the load balancer would just have a list of all the nodes I'm provisioned to. Now, in a case where, let's say we had a bunch of machine reboots from some reason, and we lost some of the boxes, when the traffic will come back, it will just go back to the previous slide to an extent. We'll just go and reprovision the site. So
our eventual SLA, we don't have an SLA now because in preview, but our eventual SLA is going to be very high because we can bounce the traffic between boxes very effectively. So that's the power of the central storage kind of design pattern. So this is a big diagram with a lot of colors. I made it myself. No. So just talking a little bit about all of the components of the system. So I think we talked about the Azure part. We talked about the load balancer and the hosting website. We have a provisioning API. So basically when the portal is calling Windows Azure websites to create this new site, it hits a REST API layer that is secured to two certificates and creates a new website. If some of you have seen our command line interface where you can create websites using a command line on Windows or Linux or Mac, that's using the same type of API. So moving forward in our GA versions, you'll be able to go and script Windows Azure websites. You can go and do some interesting stuff with either linking it to your own UX or scripting it in order to create test sites or things like that. So that's a provision API. A deployment server is basically the endpoint for FTP. You've seen the FTP demo. And when we hit the FTP, we hit the deployment server, as well as the web deploy and the Git stuff. Storage controller is our implementation of SMB inside Azure. It allows the web code to think it's running against the file system. So again, you can just migrate your code. You don't have to think about using Azure Storage APIs or things like that. And then it uses XDrive with a fault tolerant architecture in order to make sure that you always have your share available to you. Inside the web server, we have, for those of you who are familiar with IIS architecture, IIS has the Windows Activation Service. We've created a new one called the Dynamic Windows Activation Service. Basically, what it knows how to do is talk to this central database and accept the format in order to generate sites on the fly and then launch them. We have a metering service that looks at all of the consumption in real time or in very small increments in order to enable us to do quota enforcement. So for the free version, for example, we only allow a certain amount of bandwidth, I believe 165 MB a day of egress. That value is actually configurable in the hosting database. We have a plan that is the free plan. It allows several types of configurations of what type of resources a user is allowed to consume. And the metering service sits there and watches what sites or tenants are doing and then goes and enforces the quota on behalf of the central database. So again, very flexible solution that allows you to kind of have fine-grained control over what resources your tenants are allowed to consume. What am I missing? I don't know what these boxes are for. So I think that, any question kind of on the architecture before we move on? Yes. Mm-hmm. Which? Oh, so the question was how do we take care of all the fault domains? So basically, since we run on top of a hosted service, we kind of manage that for you. So obviously, the tenant doesn't have to worry about it. We have a pool of several hundred cores that run these things, and they are split into upgrade domains and fault domains. And we make sure that each site will not live in the same fault domain behind the scene. So we go talk to the Azure Fabric. Yes?
Is the provisioning API accessible directly?
It's going to be. It's not documented yet. So we wanted to reserve the right to be able to change it before our GA. The command line API is open source, so you can go look at how it's implemented. But we don't have, we're reserving the right to change it because. No more questions? So what I'm going to demo now, can you know how to switch me to the demo machine? No, it's very exciting. So I'm going to demo as, it's a pretty simple demo, but it has a powerful scenario behind it. So we've discussed the ability to have central metadata for the sites, and we talked about the kind of provisioning or deployment capabilities. So what I'm going to do now, I'll create a new website. And this time I'm in West Europe. We actually have a data center here in Amsterdam. When you create a new website, you can run in Europe, not just in East US. That's just all the demo accounts. So site config. And the scenario we're trying to talk about now is actually a case where I'm hosting this website, or I'm an IT organization, or the IT guy, and I have this outward-facing website, but I want someone else to go develop the website for me. So in this situation, and publish it. So in this situation, we can actually use the capabilities of the system and say, okay, I'll download this publish profile, which has a username and password that is only valid for this website. It does not allow me to log into the portal. So I can go and email it to my developer, for example. So I'm going to download it to this machine. And then imagine, you know, I'm also the developer and I went and built this other website in a very simple ASPX application. The interesting thing here is that we have some settings in web.config. So we have some settings that might be more interesting than just some titles for external resources, for shares, keys for APIs or what have you, and we might have test settings and production settings. So when I'm here on this dev machine, I can go ahead and just run it locally, and we will use the settings that come from this local dev web.config. So imagine the very normal situation now. If I had to deploy this to a normal IIS web server, I would have had to make sure that I either do some build step in order to replace the settings, and then I'll screw that up, or I'll have to type this in, or I have a different version of this file that I have to make sure that I deploy to production. I'm sure everyone in the room has some horror stories on how that got screwed up during some deployment. So what we can do with Windows Azure website is a very powerful concept of using this metadata database to hold some of these settings. Did I make a... So what we can do is I can go ahead and take these settings. I'll go back to the portal. Imagine again now I'm the person who actually maintains this portal or manages it, or manages this website. In the configuration tab we've shown yesterday in the other demo, we have control over some more of the fine-grained functionalities. I can turn on logging and so on and so forth. I'll go ahead and change the app settings. I'll add another one for site title, cloud site title, let's say. And the other one was, I believe, site prefix. I know that's what I care about, so I'm just sharing. So now I hit the save, and I'm done here. Since I've already downloaded the publishing profile, all I have to do here is go ahead and publish, and I'll import this profile, and we'll hit the publish button. Nope, still debugging. Yes, thank you. So again, you remember that in the local version I had these values showing up. And now when the site will launch in the cloud, if everything works okay. Yeah. Okay, so hopefully we'll get you to lunch soon. So again, very simple demo, but it's a very powerful functionality. Because that really is driving the whole ability to do different environments for a simple website. Yes, sir?
It's support from four different configurations, I think, machine keys and things like that, not just upsetting.
So right now we're only doing upsettings. We'll think about adding more. Theoretically, with upsettings, you can do whatever you want, but your code in your website will be a little bit different. For stuff like PHP and Node.js, these become actually application settings as well. Environment settings, sorry. So PHP can consume the same concept by using environment settings.
Especially the machine key thing, I cannot do it using upsettings, and it's typical that I need different keys for development and production.
So that's good feedback. We'll take it in and see what we can do. Yes? I'm sorry. Yes, so what will happen is that...
Can you repeat the question, please, for the recording?
So the question was, would changing the setting trigger a recycle? Yes, what happens is that the worker role that runs the site actually goes and gets events transmitted to it from the mothership, if you will, every time some kind of setting is changed. And in this case, this application will reload. Yes? Meaning? I didn't understand the question, sorry. Yeah.
Will it automatically also show up on the portal, on the Azure portal, so you know which keys there are too?
Oh, got you. So the question was like, would it kind of copy the app keys from the web.config into the portal? Unfortunately, not in this release. We'll take it in. We just didn't want to bother with parsing the file because it's kind of environment specific or so. Anything else before we move on? Okay.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about scalability. We talked a little bit about the fact that we have this notion of shared instances and reserved instances. So what does that actually mean? In the case of shared instances, again, you're in a high-density, multi-tenanted environment. So if you pretend this little green smiley is your application, you're running amongst a bunch of other applications that are sharing physical resources with you. And usually that's fine for to a certain point, but at a certain point, your noisy neighbors can start to have impact on your application. Or you just simply need to service a lot of requests, and a single shared instance isn't going to work for you. So in the Windows Azure portal, we have the ability to simply go and drag a slider bar and take the number of shared instances up. And so if you go and change it to 2, for example, what will happen is you'll get another shared instance of your site provisioned on another web server. And effectively, you have another W3WP worker process on that other web worker that's going to start servicing requests. The load balancing schema automatically gets configured, so you have nice load balancing between those, and you don't have to do anything other than drag that slider and click save. We're still dealing with shared instances, though, at this point. So you're still subject to quota and a bunch of other things, and you still really are in a multi-tenanted environment. Furthermore, you're not really going to get better application performance because the hardware, you know, that's running your shared instance is the same for both of those instances. So that's where reserved instances come in. If you have shared instances and you want to go to reserved instances, you simply change the setting, and Nir's going to show us how this works. And your site will be provisioned on your own dedicated virtual machine. And that virtual machine, you can select the size and the various specs that you'd like. And now you're single-tenanted, so you're the only one who's consuming those resources, and you're not impacted at all by your neighbors. Once you're in reserved instance mode, though, you also have the ability to scale. So if you go and change the slider bar, in that case, you're getting another dedicated virtual machine, and your application code is automatically replicated to that second virtual machine, And again, the load balancing is automatically set up for you. So all you need to do is drag the slider, click save, and you get multiple reserved instances. So if you need better application performance, you're going to want to pick, you know, bigger virtual machines. Think about it as scaling up. And then if you simply need to service more inbound requests, you can scale those virtual machines out horizontally. The nice benefit also of using reserved instances is that if you personally host multiple sites, so say you're a developer and you have a lot of clients, or you're an IT manager who's actually has a lot of different things that they need to aggregate, sort of back to the scenario we talked about earlier where you have, you know, some new sites, some legacy sites, and you really want a nice unified way to host and manage all of these things. Well, you can get reserved instances, and then those reserved instances can be shared by you amongst all of your own sort of tenants. So all of those sites can be consuming those same resources, and then you can monitor and manage which of those applications sort of need more capability, and you can scale up and down as necessary. But it's all managed by you, and you have you have visibility into all of the sites as opposed to the other scenario where you're subject to, you know, the whims of other people. So let's go ahead and do a little bit of a demo where Nir's going to show you how the actual scaling works in the portal and sort of show you what happens when you try to hit sites once they've been scaled.
Cool. So if you remember what we've discussed before, we had we have the central database that knows what type of tenant you are. If you chose to start paying us, we bump you to a different type of plan. And as soon as you're on the new plan, we're able to, the first time you'll hit your site again, or one of your customers will hit your site, we will know that we have to bounce you to a new machine. So when I'm moving from shared to reserved, basically we're going to the back end, we're saying, okay, take this box and kind of pin it for my subscription, so all my sites will go there. And then every time my sites get hit, what happens then is, the provisioning flow works the same way. That web worker gets the call for the site. It goes to the central database, pulls down the content, and serves your site from that reserved instance, and then you get to essentially compete with yourself as a multi-tenant. So, you know, if you had 10 sites and they're all on the same reserved instance, then that will take the same hit. A couple of things about how this works in the preview release, because we kind of implemented a couple of rules that made sense in order to kind of get feedback, is as soon as you create your 10 your 10 shared sites, you're pinned to a data center. So the first site you'll create, if you're a new customer, all your sites will be in that data center for that subscription. You can delete all of them and move to a new one if you want. And once you've went into the reserved, we will just take all these 10 sites and put it on that reserved server. At that point, you can go up to 100 sites. So after you've gotten into the reserved instance, you can keep going and creating new sites. However, obviously, because we're all, you know, engineers, what happens when you want to downgrade? When you want to downgrade and you had more than 10 sites, you'll get an error from the portal, and the portal will ask you to go delete back to 10 in order to go back to shared. So our test team, you know, thought about everything. So what I'll do here is something super simple. We'll go to the same application we've seen before. And in the about page, I'm just exposing the name of the web server we're running on. So this is just the internal name of this shared box that we're running on right now. Then I'll go back to the portal and I'll move to the reserved instance. I need to make sure that I went to and removed the spending cap. If I didn't do that, then my subscription will get eventually disabled in 24 hours. I can check which type of box I want. We started with these three sizes just again from capacity reason for the preview. We'd love to hear feedback if people are interested in other sizes from Azure, because we can go ahead and expose that. Extra large just seemed too much for, at least for a preview perspective. So I'll go ahead and use a medium in this case, or small, and I'll save it. Then it's asking me if I understand what's going to happen. and we're going to go ahead and change the scale. Another thing that I can do is I can also add, if I really wanted to, I could go and add more instances of the reserved. So in this case, all my sites will run on these three reserved boxes. Again, in the future, we will be able to allow people to say, okay, if I had these 100 sites, some of them are not stateless, so they need to run on one box, and you'll be able to kind of pin a site to a box. So we're aware of that requirement as well. So now, again, if I go and browse to this website and go to the About page, we will see that we're running on a different box. So again, very simple, I think. Let's see. Yeah, it looks like a different number. Okay. I'm still amazed that this stuff works, right? Yeah. I've been working on this project for a while, and it's very exciting to see it. So again, a very simple kind of how we scale. We thought that we'd show a little bit more of kind of under the hoods in the troubleshooting area. So this is kind of the same thing I've done yesterday in the larger talk, but we'll go through this and can ask questions. Basically, one of the things that we wanted to make sure is that you have kind of the same troubleshooting capabilities that you have with just running IIS. So in this case, it's, again, a very simple situation. I hit the help link here, and it's busted. It's not really working for me. What I can do at this point, since I'm in this persona, I'm not the dev. I'm the guy who owns the site. I can go to the configures tab and turn on my diagnostic setting. So again, in this case, what happens is IIS now will start generating these files. The logging is just the vanilla IIS logs that we all know. Detail error messages and FREB files, failed requests are again some features of IIS 7. We do have some buffering on the amount of files that we'll keep. I believe we keep, 35 MBs of files before we will recycle them. And I think that you get a day to download them before we'll delete and things like that. That's documented. So we're trying to make sure that we don't override your shared storage with the files that you create. The FREB files are just overriding each other until a certain amount of them. So now we have the logging turned on. I'll go back and generate some more errors here. Then I can go and look at my files. The way we expose the file right now is through FTP. We're looking at more friendly ways in future releases. So you can go here. Oops. Let's take it. I think the number one feature request is a copy button here. And then the username, which is includes the site name. That's how we're telling this publisher role I've shown you before where to go in the database to actually expose the shared storage. And hopefully my password is the one I remember. So now we can see the website. We're getting good latencies in the data center here in Amsterdam. I can go ahead to the site, to the log file folder. I see all these new folders that got generated. We'll start with the failed request files. That's an XML. It comes with an XSLT. You can download that. I guess I had one of these before. Then when we open it, we'll get kind of a detailed summary of what happened. There's a whole stack trace here. In this case, this error is not that helpful. I can go back to to the FTP view, look at the detail there. Apparently right click doesn't work so well. There we go. So I can see more information, what you would see in IIS as well. And then it says, you know, a default document is not configured. So I can go and see, because I didn't write this up, I just got it somewhere. I can go and actually look at the site itself. And I look at the help, and actually there's a help.aspx here. So I'll copy the name. Another thing that I can do with Windows Azure website in the management console is in the configuration tab, I can also control the default document for this site. So I can just go ahead and add this guy here and save. So now what's going to be interesting is that we just generated a change request to the site, right? So there was a question about this before. So now when I go and if I go back here, we're paying some price on the fact that the site is being reloaded. So when I click the back button, you saw that there was some delay because the site was actually reloaded because the web, the default document now is a bit different. The app.config has changed. Questions? Okay. When I scale down the sites. No, if you had three and you want to move from three to one, you can't choose them. But if you what you mean is that when I had more than 10 sites and I want to go down to shared, then yeah, because you just go delete them in the portal. So you can just pick which ones you don't like or you don't need anymore. In this view, imagine you had more and you just delete them. Oh, I see. So that's a future feature? Yeah, okay. So the question was if I had more than one reserved instance, and I actually had some sites pinned to a reserved instance, and then I wanted to move down back to shared, is how will I be able to manage that? Since this feature doesn't exist yet, I can, you know, tell you anything you want to hear, but that's a good point. We'll consider that. Right now, it all goes in one package, right? All your sites move from one place to the other. Yes?
Since you are having a certain instance, is it possible to run the caching, which was written before your
instance? So the question was, yesterday there was a demo for the new caching, which runs on a, runs locally on the box, and the question was, can you run it on a reserved instance? Not in the preview yet. We'll look into it as we move forward. Yes?
What about the session management? So let's say I have an application with a single instance and I heavily take use of session variables. It's an ASP.NET application.
Yes.
Now I move it here and I scale it up.
So ASP...
How would it work?
So for ASP.NET, if you use the vanilla... scenario, they use a cookie in order to make the session sticky.
Right.
And that will work.
So the load balancer will understand that, you know, the load balancer knows I have to use sticky sessions. Sticky sessions or?
It understands sticky sessions using a cookie. Not, for example, there's other techniques where you use sticky session using an IP range, for example. So it doesn't do that. What it does support the ASP.NET one, which is a cookie-based. And that will work for you. Obviously, no one is really, we don't recommend using these type of scenarios, right? But, yeah, because you'll use it, you lose it if the machine blows up, right?
Another question.
Yes?
You said that if I have 10 shared instances, you know, websites which are running in shared instances, and then when I go to reserved instance, I can take those 10
In the preview version that we have right now, they all move to one reserved instance.
So as soon as you take one and say reserved, the other nine automatically get put into this reserved instance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, if you had two reserved instances, you essentially now have, these sites will work on both of them.
So my site just, each shared, previously shared instance got load balanced now.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which includes some Azure hours. Can I use them for reserved instance of website?
So the answer is yes. The question was if I have MSDN subscriptions that includes free compute hours, are those redeemable on a shared instance? The answer is yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So go ahead and use it for free.
Mm-hmm. Here for a long time, works as read only for all except one instance, if I understand it correctly. In the case of Azure websites, if I write something into a data folder, it gets replicated automatically, and I can write from any load balancer instance or something like that.
So the question was about how the X drive works, or the app data folder. So actually, you can write into it from each of the instances. It doesn't get replicated. It just sits in one place. What I mentioned was that it actually has fault tolerance. So each of these shares are exposed from one machine, but there's a couple of other machines that are trying to take the lease for that share in case one of them fails. So it has fault tolerance. But yeah, you're writing to the same. If you have three instances running of the same app and you're writing to the same file, you might get contention issue. Yes, sir. So the question was about, can I create a MySQL database as a standalone? So there's a couple of things here. So we provide one free 20 megabyte MySQL database with the website. Right now, there is no UX to create it by itself. What you can do is you can go create a website. You can go in the new site create and create a website with a database. And it will create this MySQL database for you, and you can ignore the website and just go use it. If you want to buy a bigger database running on Azure, our partner ClearDB is selling them on Azure. So you can go to cleardb.com and buy a bigger database from them. And that runs on the same clusters as Windows Azure website, or the same data centers. So we have, I'm sorry, you had follow-up?
So
the answer is yes. You can contact me, and I can put you in touch with the folks who own the gallery. So the question is about auto scaling. In the preview right now, there are not. What you will be able to do, or you can do now if you have the CLI tools, is you can use the APIs to auto-scale, but you'll have to actually find ways to figure out when it's needed and so on and so forth. So we are aware of this requirement. We'll look into it in the... Yes?
What's the difference, but if you're right now to go and create a website, it seems to me you can still go the web role way that you had, say, a few weeks ago, and then like a reserved instance.
Mm-hmm. So we still have WebAll, not to make sure that people know. Since we never get this question, we have a slide for that as well. So kind of the big answer is, it goes back to some stuff that was discussed in yesterday's session. With Windows Azure website, all you care about to an extent is the code, right? So you don't have to manage any of the resources. But that comes with a limitation, right? So for example, you can't RDP into the box and go mess with stuff. You can't get your media decoder and install it and register it or GAC it or something like that. It's harder to go talk to resources inside your enterprise because we're in a shared environment. We don't have, we're not supporting the Brooklyn stuff or what is it called?
What is Azure Virtual Networking?
Yeah, thank you. So in those cases, you might want to go with a WebAll. Usually the directive we're saying is, hey, if your application is more of kind of an N-tiered solution, if you need to talk to enterprise, and specifically if you want to control the box, or you want to do all this kind of orchestrated deployment that you can do with WebAll, like the VIP swap and things like that, you're probably better off using cloud services. What we're trying to do is to kind of cut the time to market. Create the application really quick. If you get to a situation where you really need to move to the box, you really need to access the WebAll, you can go ahead and use WebDeploy to suck the Windows Azure website application from Windows Azure website, and then package it as a CS pack and go up and make a WebAll out of that. I think yesterday they announced there's some tooling in Visual Studio that allows you to take just a vanilla website project and make it a cloud project. So it could be pretty seamless to say, okay, I had this project that we've just shown. I've grown, my needs are now not met by a reserved instance. I'll just go ahead and repackage it and put it on the cloud.
And what we've done with this release really is to try to build more of a comprehensive solution. So if you want to have, you know, your web tier, very scalable, very easy, quick deployment, you can take advantage of websites, but you need some back-end business logic or something managing messaging, you can build very easily a worker role. And then you need some open source thing that runs on Linux on a VM on the back end. So you can really mix and match these technologies and take advantage of the capabilities of each of them to build the right solution for you. So you should have a really good, flexible set of options here with all these three services.
What about availability in unsupported countries, for example, Estonia, or this situation in those countries?
So the question was availability in different countries. Basically, we follow the data centers that Azure rolls out. I believe we have right now two in Europe, in Dublin, and in here in Amsterdam. I don't know what their plans are, so...
You're asking for the billing issues.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah, so we announced, I think, another 90-something countries just a couple of weeks ago, and I think we're up to 121. I may be making these numbers up out of thin air, so don't quote me on this, but we just announced a whole bunch more countries, and on WindowsAzure.com, we have the complete list. Unfortunately, I don't have a roadmap for you in terms of what countries are coming when, but, you know, send us your feedback. If in Estonia, there's a huge developer community that is very keen and eager to get Windows Azure. Let's talk about it, and we can, you know, work through the prioritization of the various countries based on what customers are telling us. Absolutely.
Yes?
Websites do not support, as of now, .NET 4.5.
Yes.
Is there some chance that it will change in the near future?
So I never get this question either. Yeah. I'm just kidding. So the question was on .NET 4.5. Our policy right now is to match that with the Windows Server 8 deployment because Windows Server comes with 4.5 built in. So we kind of said, okay, we're in transitional state because it's launching in the next couple of months or 2 or 3 months. So our plan right now would be to essentially migrate a Windows Azure website to Windows 8 behind the scenes, and then 4.5 will become available. Since 4 and 4.5 are essentially, it's an in-place upgrade. It's not a side-by-side.
So basically, we need to wait until RPM. It's not.
Yes, but that's not as long as you think. I can't. But, yeah. So I don't know what your expectations are, but how about this calendar year? It should be okay, so. Yes. You cost me my job, so I'll be honest.
Yeah. In the back, sir.
Yeah.
If you have multiple reserved instances and you publish your site, what actually happens under the covers? Does it publish once and propagate out to multiples, or does it publish three times, say?
So the question was, what happens when I have three reserved instances and when I publish? You're actually publishing once to the central location. It's the same as the shared. And all of these reserved instances are pointing to the same location. Yes?
When you have a reserved instance, is it still turned off if you're not accessing it, or is it always?
Does the reserved instance?
So the question is, a reserved instance always hot? The answer is yes. If you don't get hits on your site, you're still paying for the reservation. But again, unfortunately, we don't have the auto-scaling yet where we can bounce you down, but it's pretty easy to bounce down if you need to. So that's something we're looking at right now for our GA version, to have something in the middle, if you will. Was the question there?
So the content for the site is stored in an X-Drive.
Yes.
So, you know, my understanding is with X-Drive, one instance gets read-write permission, all other instances will be read-only.
Yes, so we actually, so the question was, we're hosting the content on X-Drive, and the way X-Drive work is that only one machine has the lease that can write into it, and everyone else will be in read-only. We actually put another layer in the middle to solve that problem for you. So you don't have to worry about it to an extent.
So if I upload, so let's say I'm doing a setup registration site where the user is uploading some content, what are your recommendations? I mean, should I just save it on along with the application that we normally do with ASP.NET applications? Or should we go ahead and make use of block storage to store my pages as persistent storage?
You should make use of blob storage.
Yeah, that's the So if it depends on the size of the data, is the more detailed answer is basically we don't provide that much space, right? We provide a 1 GB and 10 GB for the reserved instance. So if you have images, you want to put them in blob storage. We kind of follow the model of some of our competitors. For example, in Heroku, you get very little disk storage. So, and they tell people to go use EC2 or whatever. So in case of images and so on, yes, we'll tell you to use blob storage.
Yes, sir.
Yes. So the question is, does it support TFS on-prem? I'm not familiar with that, the roadmap for that. I don't know who the TFS guys are.
Yeah, there's a TFS expert down in the expo. I recommend you come down and then we can discuss down there. That's going to be probably better to get the right person.
What you can do is you can go, you know, old school and use web deploy command line in your build process and push it up that way. Yes?
Is SQL Server Compact officially supported on any website?
So the question is SQL Server Compact officially supported? The answer is yes. But you got to read the fine print. And SQL Server CE only supports one concurrent connection, right? Yeah, so it has some algorithms there to allow you to time out and go to another connection, but it's not support. I would not recommend it for more than one instance. Is kind of the.
You mean more than one instances in terms of the load balancing?
Correct. Yeah, but definitely for a quick kind of test or whatever, it works very well. We've actually tested it specifically. Yes. Yeah, that would work, yes. I think we're almost out of time. Or?
Yeah, just about 5 more minutes. And you do get a free SQL database. Also, only one as part of the preview, the free. And then, of course, you can pay for the small, medium, or large SQL database as well. But it may be big enough for what you need for these small kinds of registration sites, and you don't have to worry about the limitations with Compact. Other questions? All right. Well, really appreciate everyone taking the time today. We'd really like to get your feedback. So if you have an opportunity and you enjoyed the session, please submit your feedback. If you didn't enjoy the session, have a nice afternoon.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks.